BulaNetwork.com, episode 125. Are you a pessimist or are you an optimist? And when you're asked that, do you often say, well, I feel like I'm a realist. What we think, what we say to ourselves. We'll talk about it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Surprisingly enough, and I don't know why I continue to be surprised, but I confess that I do. I get asked quite frequently if I would do more shows about how we think, what we think, mindset, and I don't know. I don't know why it just has never struck me that that was something that people were terribly compelled about. I don't know why. I look about my library and I have countless books, many of them very old, about things like that. I think back as a young father and when my kids were small. They're grown now. But I would frequently talk to them about these little voices in your head. And I would describe these as, you know, this little man standing on your shoulder, whispering in your ear, telling you these things. My son, for instance, when he was quite small, I don't know if someone gave it to him. I don't recall us buying it, but somehow he ended up with a pogo stick. Have you seen these death traps for children? So he has this pogo stick. And, of course, he jumps on it, and who can master a pogo stick right off the bat? I mean, I would dare say the greatest gymnast on the planet would probably have a difficult time mastering it right off the bat. Much less a small boy. So he jumps on this thing, and because he couldn't master it the first or second time, he just threw it down in disgust. And that seemed to be a bit of a characteristic that he had. And he continues to have to fight that. And we recognized it very early in him, that he had this wiring. It was just in the fabric of his personality was this, you know, if I can't do it brilliantly right off the bat, then what's the use? And thankfully, there were many things that he could do well right off the bat, but a lot of work to try to show him various aspects of mental toughness to push through so that you can achieve this, push through so that you can accomplish this thing. Played Little League Baseball, you know, and he was going to be the kid that if he struck out, just watch out. I mean, the bat is coming loose. Just, you know, not angry at anyone and competitive with others, but mostly competitive with himself. And so I remember spending countless hours talking to him about, you know, this and what it amounts to, you and I both know, as self-talk. You know, what are you saying to yourself? What are you hearing in your head when you strike out? What do you hear? What does that voice say? And for him, unfortunately, you know, that voice would say things like, you know, you stink, you can't do this, you're an idiot. and just all of these self-loathing kind of things. And as his parents, you know, we would continue to try to encourage him and build him up and tell him, you know, you'll do better next time. And of course, as a little kid, he would put so much pressure on himself. You could just see the spiral. Well, now, fortunately, over time, he's been able, with a little bit of help — I don't profess to have given a whole lot of help, I tried — it's just how people are wired, and he has, you know, he has learned to manage some things and deal with some things. My grandson, who will turn 5 later this summer, I can look at him, and he is a very cautious child. He is fearful, in that he's not going to do anything that seems terribly risky. He's very risk adverse. And no one made him that way. He is that way. My granddaughter, who just turned 1, you can already see, just completely, utterly fearless. She's afraid of no one. She's afraid of no situation. She's just, my wife calls her the honey badger. And she is. I mean, in a lot of ways. And you look at these little people, and you realize, if you're a mature person who's been on the planet any length of time, you just come to realize, yes, there are things that we can certainly overcome. I'm a firm believer that we can adapt, and we can morph, and we can change, and we can improve. But man, there are so many little elements of who we are and our personalities, and it is how we are wired, you'll hear people say. It's our personality. And those are just, you know, those are things that you can push against those all you want. I rather think that that's not smart. You know, the proverb is, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And while it is a proverb, which means it is not this empirical truth 100% of the time, but it is a general truth that if you do train up a child in the way she should go, he won't depart from it. But I think part of the meaning is so misunderstood by the masses. In training up a child in the way he should go, training up a child based on the way he's bent. So if you take my 1-year-old granddaughter, who is relatively fearless, it's ideal that her parents recognize that now, because they will need to help her learn to be afraid of some things. There are some things that we need to be afraid of. There are some risks that we do need to be adverse to. Now, on the other hand, my oldest grandson, his parents likely need to encourage him. Not everything is a risk. There are some things that his nature to be adverse to risk are helpful, beneficial. But we clearly don't want this little boy to grow up and be afraid of everything. And so you have 2 completely different kids wired completely differently whose parents need to take that into account. And I think that holds true for you and I as adults as well. I think we need to, for me, all of this whole mindset kind of a thing begins with that simple phrase, know thyself. And boy, is that hard. I don't have any hard, fast rules for that. I can simply share with you some of the things that over the course of my life that I have done. Number one, I have spent a ton of time in self-reflection. Some people are more introspective than other people. Some people are more, you know, externally driven. I have always been very internally driven, in that I will assess a situation or some circumstance, and I learned very early on, and this is obviously driven by my faith, first and foremost, there are so many things beyond my control. Now, you may be a person who doesn't share my belief, and that's fine, and you may believe that you are in complete control. I don't have a whole lot of wisdom to share with you because I don't share that perspective. I just don't happen to believe that I am in nearly the control that I might sometimes like to think I am. So I begin, however, looking at a circumstance or a situation, and I'm always perplexed and frankly bothered by people who say they look back and they never second guess themselves. And my gut visceral reaction to that is, well, you're an idiot. You're foolish. I mean, who among us doesn't look back in the rearview mirror and say, you know, I don't know that I would have done that exactly that way. Are we so profoundly confident and arrogant and pompous as to think that every decision that we make is the perfect decision when we make it? Because that's in essence what we're saying if we say, well, yeah, you know, I don't second guess myself. I have a confession to make. I second guess myself all the time. Not only do I second guess myself, I'll third guess and fourth guess myself. Now, I think there's a difference in doing that and beating yourself up. I think there's a difference in looking back at circumstances, situations, decisions, and saying, how could I have done that better? How could I have improved that? To me, that's progress. That's trying to be better. That's trying to live better, to become a better person, to use mistakes, to use missteps, to use even acts of foolishness. I mean, who among us can't look back at our youth and our childhood and say, man, what a stupid, I can't believe I did that. I mean, I have used myself as an example of what not to do for my children for a long, long time. And every child is going to do stupid things. Every teenager is going to do stupid things. You know, my admonition was always to my kids, you know, what we don't want for you as your parents is we don't want you to make a mistake from which you cannot recover. We don't want you making some mistake that is tragic. You're going to mess up. You're going to make mistakes. You know, that's part of life. It's part of growing up, part of getting better. As you hear the bird outside the Yellow Studio, hey, you know, it's just another day in the 60s here in Dallas-Fort Worth, so yeah, I've got the window open, and I know it's a violation of all that is right in the world of audio recording, but, you know, deal with it. Invariably, I can go for long periods of time, and it can be just stone silent outside, and I will, the minute I fire up the studio and I start recording, it's as though the birds have, there's some on-the-air sign that is posted outside the Yellow Studio that I'm completely unaware of, and the wildlife are notified. Hey, Randy's recording. Let's fly over here and perch on this limb and start chirping our heads off. I rather enjoy it, but it might be distracting for you. Anyway, and I'm sure it's distracting now that I've called attention to it, so you'll be listening carefully for it, so I probably should not have done that. See, there you go. Now, there's a perfect case. Second guess, should I have said anything or just let it go? Truth be told, I should have just let it go. And you know that. So let's use that as a teaching moment here. So everything that we say, everything that we do, every decision that we make, it was the very best decision that we could make at the time. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't have anywhere near that high opinion of myself. I have made some horrifically dumb decisions in the past. Some of those I have shared with you. Many of those I have shared with you. So I am not holding myself up as some bastion of wisdom because I'm still learning, still trying to learn. So the biggest thing for me is that introspection and to walk the fine line, as I have learned with my son, for instance, who can not only practice self-introspection, but is very capable of really beating himself up and doing it in a way where he has a difficult time letting go. You know, I mean, just really abusing himself, you know, thinking, man alive, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have. And I continue even to this day to try to pull him more towards center of understanding that these mistakes, these errors, these whatever he wants to call them, these failures, that use these things to learn. And you can only use them to learn if you can get past them. They will continue to spiral you out of control in a downward motion if you hang on to them. And so he's throughout his youth, he's had to learn, and he's still learning. He's still a young man, and he's still learning. I'm a middle-aged man, and I'm still learning. You know, how do you let go of some of these things? Well, some of the things that I do is I continue to tell myself, and I continue to tell him, as we both practice our own version of introspection, of, you know, are there things that we can learn from that? Are there things that we can take away from that? If you look back now and you would have done it differently, why? Why? And why didn't you make that decision the first time? Or why didn't you do that differently the first time? In some cases, I don't know about you, but in some cases for me, it's because now I can look back and I can see more clearly what I could not see at the time. And sometimes as I practice this introspection, I'm able to say, I moved too quickly. I made a decision too fast. Had I tabled the decision for just 24 hours, in some cases less, I would have had a greater degree of awareness and I would have made a better decision. But because I felt, for whatever reason, I felt the need to make a decision faster, or maybe there were external circumstances that I felt were pressuring me to make a decision quicker. In other cases, it's because I didn't have information at the time that I had at some later date. And for that reason, I'm like, you know, here once again is living proof that had I just tabled it, because there was no big time component that was driving me, I just, here was the circumstance, here was an opportunity, I made a decision, and I shouldn't have. I should have waited. Had I just sat and been still and waited a day or two or three or however many, the situation would have unfolded and some things would have been more clearly known to me and new facts would have come into play that would have affected my decision. But again, and looking back and in second guessing myself, well, I see what I did. And 3 days later, here was new information that completely changed the whole scenario. So we've all got those kinds of things that happen to us. And for me, my habit from the time I was a child till now has been to look back and to try to see how could I do better? What could I have done differently? What can I learn from this? And again, keeping in mind the fact that I'm not in control. I'm not in control of everything. You know, you only know what you know, and there are so many circumstances that befall us that are completely out of our control. It's that moniker, you know, bad things do happen to good people, and good things happen to bad people, right? It just, time and circumstance, as the scripture says, time and circumstance happens to them all. And boy, that is true. So I think it's important for us to practice introspection. And again, not to beat ourselves up, but to try to use it as a learning experience. Coupled with that, I would say secondly, is to try to learn from it, but then move on. So how can we let go? How can we learn from our past, but then continue to make progress and to press on? Well, for me, again, and I'm not holding myself up as an example, I'm just, you know, this show today is simply about sharing some information, and if it can help you in some way, or if it can just spark your own creative juices, then great. That's what I'm hoping for. For me, I immediately want to try to engage my thought by applying that to something that is present or something that is in the near future. You know, for instance, if I'm looking back at something and, you know, I got that wrong. I got that wrong. Well, take, for instance, me mentioning this bird outside. So what am I going to do with that? Well, I have done this before. Okay, that's not the first time that I've made that error. Let's assume that that was a failure. Let's assume that that was a, well, let's call it what it really is, a distraction. So I called attention to a distraction that you very well may not have even heard, but I heard it in my headphones, and so I'm assuming that you heard it, and so I'm explaining it. Well, probably stupid on my part. And so I realize that I've done it. I'm thinking about that and how that has impacted your listening experience to this podcast. And now I'm making mental note of it. You know, I need to give that greater thought moving forward. And maybe even on a great day like today, where I do love having windows open and breeze blowing through the studio, maybe I should make it a habit to just not do this. Maybe I should make it a habit to make sure that I've got the environment that I need to have so that that not only doesn't serve as a distraction for you, but it doesn't serve as a distraction for me. And so that's the learning that could take place. Now, let's couple with that. How can we apply now what we know, now what we feel to our present or some future situation, but now what's our commitment going to be? Am I going to make a commitment to do that? I'm not there yet. And again, this is all happening in real time. I'm just thinking this through as this is happening to me. Am I going to be fully committed to having that window closed? Well, summer's coming, and in North Central Texas, the outside heat is going to dictate I'm not going to have windows open, not for very long, which is why I have them open now. You know, we in this part of the country, we have this, pardon the phrase or pun, we have this window of opportunity where we can open doors and windows, and it's great. And right now, we're in that time. 30 days from now, that window will be long closed, I assure you. It'll be hot. So it won't happen. So what's my commitment going to be? I don't know. Am I prepared to tell you right here today, from now on, I will make sure that you know, the noise in the Yellow Studio is going to be superb? No. Sorry. Should I make that commitment? Probably. It would be the easiest decision to make for you. But am I willing to do that? I don't know. Well, not yet. I'm not. And so now we come, you know, to the third step of this all, and that is the commitment. What's our commitment going to be to all of this? What's our commitment going to be to the messages that we say to ourselves and to trying to let go of some past failure and embrace hopeful future success? Are we going to be committed to self-loathing? Are we going to be committed to, I can't believe I did that? Are we going to be committed to, that was stupid, that was idiotic, I can't believe I'm that crazy? Or are we going to be committed to, I'm going to learn? And are we going to be committed to, life is all about learning, welcome to the world? Are we going to be committed to holding ourselves up and believing that we're above all that? We're superhumans. You know, some years ago, there was this whole phenom that went around about supermom. Moms who were career mothers, but got pregnant. They would have their children, and they would continue their corporate job or whatever their career path was, and they had all the pressures of trying to be successful in the business world, and then at home trying to be the successful wife, and at home trying to be the successful mother, and so there was this whole super mom phenomenon of the pressures that professional women who had kids were feeling, that they just couldn't live up to it. You know, they just couldn't be supermom. And so it's reminiscent to me of the whole notion of having your cake and eating it too, which isn't always possible. I mean, the truth is, some things do have to give. And if you are going to commit yourself to self-loathing, if you're going to commit yourself to, you know, a constant ongoing self-deprecation and a sense of failure, you're likely to repeat that. You're likely to get caught in a big tailspin of that being how you live your life. Because you do know that the big thing here is all of these things that we think about, those are the things that do define us. Now, they don't define us in and of themselves. They define us in the sense that they spark and they cause and they compel our actions and our behavior. So when we read these things, well, you read in Scripture. It's as ancient as the Scripture. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And then, you know, many, many, many centuries later, Napoleon Hill would write Think and Grow Rich. And people often, I think, abuse and misuse that as though you just sit around and you just think about it. It's one of the dangers of the law of attraction, as some people know it, of I just think it to be. I post it on my mirror. I write it all over my house, and I have these little post-it notes and index cards taped up all over my house and all over my car, and it will just miraculously come true. No. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, carries with it a real fundamental truth that is terribly significant in every area of life, and that is, we behave, we take action based on what we're thinking. If you take someone who is engaged in criminal behavior, that criminal behavior is not because, well, their body is out of control. I'm not thinking anything about committing crime. I'm not thinking about stealing. I'm not thinking about assaulting people or whatever it is. My body just does that. No, that would be ludicrous, and we know that. No, the person who is a thief, the person who steals, is a person who is thinking about stealing. They're thinking about ways that they can go rob someone. The person who is prone and given to violence is thinking about smacking somebody. They're thinking about, well, forbid, they're thinking about killing someone. Those of us who don't, we just don't harbor those kinds of thoughts. We don't allow those thoughts to dominate our thoughts. Many of us may work at not even allowing a glancing or a passing thought about such things to enter our life. Well, it just doesn't cross our mind to engage in that kind of behavior. And so we may read stories, we may hear newscasts about various criminal activity, and how many of us, we read and we listen to those stories and we ask ourselves, what in the world were they thinking? Well, they weren't thinking what you're thinking, unless you're a criminal. They're just not thinking that way. You know, it's long been noted that the person who's thinking about going to rob a bank or robbing a convenience store or a gas station or whatever, some person who's going to go and commit an armed robbery, for them, the thought is, I need money. I know what I'll do. I'll go rob this store. You and I think, I need some money. Where can I go earn it? What can I do to make more money? Now, you could be desperate and you could be thinking, who might I be able to borrow some money from? But hopefully it doesn't cross your mind. Who can I go rob? What's the biggest opportunity for me to go rob somebody? So our behavior is dictated by what we think about. And so in that regard, all of this, mindset, self-talk, call it whatever you want to. It's crucial. It's crucial because the actions that we take today and every day spawn from what we think about. And that isn't true just in terms of business goals, but it's true in our personal goals and how we want to live our life. Now, for guys like me, what kind of a husband do I want to be? What kind of a father do I want to be now? What kind of a grandfather do I want to be? What kind of a podcaster do I want to be? What kind of a business person do I want to be? What kind of a person do I want to be? Can we affect all of that? Well, absolutely we can. Absolutely we can. You know, I rather tire of people who say, well, you know, so-and-so, well, he just can't help it. I remember a wife who made a comment about her husband, and he was just a notorious liar. And everyone knew it. I mean, he was just one of those guys. It didn't matter what it was. He was going to embellish it. He was going to overplay it. It was never going to be honestly or truthfully represented. And her comment was, well, you know, it's just how he is. It's just who he is. He just has a hard time telling the truth. Well, no kidding. He has a hard time telling the truth because telling the truth is not important to him. It's not a priority for him. He doesn't think truthfully, and so he doesn't speak truthfully. What a horrible, horrible character flaw. But unlike his wife, I'm not persuaded that this is beyond the scope of his ability to control. He is how he thinks. He thinks like a liar, and he's a liar. Well, that's true for all of us. If you're going to approach your life from a vantage point that you're going to embellish, you're going to misrepresent, you're going to blow yourself up to be something bigger than you really are, and that's how you have it in your head, then that's how you're going to come off. If, on the other hand, you have it in your mind that even if the news is bad, even if the decision is not favorable for the other person, you're going to be as gentle and as kind, but you're going to tell them. You know, I mean, take, for instance, in business, we have these business interactions all the time where people may ask us, they might ask us for a better price, for instance, and you may not feel that you even should give someone a better price. Maybe you don't even have the ability to give them a better price. And so you have to deliver the news that, you know, the price is the price. Well, even in delivering bad news, you can certainly do that in a kind and gentle way, but I know some people that have a very difficult time telling people no, and they get themselves wrapped up in all kinds of trouble because they don't say no. I know some business people, I know some salespeople who, when asked for a discount or when asked for more favorable terms or when asked for something additional, they just can't handle being all that forthright. They have a great difficulty in saying no, even doing it politely. And so what they do is they say, well, let me work on that. Let me see what I can do. Full well knowing they can't do anything. And so then another week goes by and, well, I'm still working on that. And what happens is eventually the person just gets tired of waiting on them. And now the opportunity is gone. When if they would have just made up their mind, you know, I'm going to deal with integrity. I'm just going to tell this person the honest truth. Listen, here's what the offer is. We believe it's compelling. And, you know, are there things in it that you don't find of value? I mean, is there something that you just don't think is worth it? And just have the conversation. But you know what? We do that in all areas of our life. We sometimes have those kinds of conversations with ourselves where we just can't face the reality of it. And as a result, we just don't make the commitment to ourselves to be who we need to be, what we need to be, or what we want to be. So commitment, you know, commit yourself to being honest with yourself. I don't know that it's fourth, but I'll end on this note because I think that the perceptions and the perspectives of other people is crucial. I think we're all very benefited if we have people in our lives who love us. And admittedly, I have learned, you have to understand that not every, people are wired very differently. As I began the podcast and pointed out with just the difference between my one-year-old granddaughter and my almost five-year-old grandson. I think you also have to be mindful of people who would give you feedback. A, not everybody is capable of giving you good feedback. And I don't mean good feedback in that they just heap praise upon you, but some people just have a difficult time in telling you how it really is. Just like my sales buddies who sometimes find it difficult to just be honest and upfront. I know some people who have solicited from friends and from close people in their life certain things that have come up in their life for feedback and assistance, and the friend tells them what they want to hear because they just have too much fear. They can't bring themselves to just say what they really need to say. You might have had a friend ask you something and you might be thinking you really want to tell them something, but instead you find yourself saying, "Oh no, I think you did a good job, or I think you're doing a good job, or I think you're fine. When there are two or three things that you could tell them that might would make a meaningful difference, but you either can't summons up the courage to tell them, or maybe you're afraid that you can't couch it in a nice enough communication that they would accept it. So we've got all this baggage that gets in our way sometimes when we're communicating with each other and we're giving each other feedback. And you and I both know, so few of us get that. So few of us ask for it, and so we're just not very equipped. Most of us just do not, we just don't have the skills because these are muscles we've not exercised. When is the last time you had a close friend say, "Would you give me some feedback?" I've said this story before, but I'm going to end on this note because I do think that it's noteworthy, and it's not likely that you've heard this in the past because I've only mentioned it a long, long time ago. But I went through a spell where I was really trying to examine my life in a more serious way than I had in a long, long time, primarily professionally. I was going through, I called it a midlife crisis. I'm not sure what it was, but at any rate, I reached out to some close friends. I mean, close friends. And I had been studying a particular subject, and the subject basically was this whole notion of soaring with your strengths. And I had been studying from a variety of people who specialize in that particular area of human achievement. And I thought it was grand advice. And one of the advices was, you know, here's a sample email or letter. Make this your own, but send this out to your close friends and see what kind of feedback you get. And so I did. I kind of used this template. I made it my own. And I wrote to about half a dozen people. And I said, you know, I'm at a point in my life and I'm, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And one of the questions was, you know, when you think of me, what do you think of? What comes to mind? And it was very innocuous, really. I mean, I wasn't asking people to, you know, share deep, dark secrets or anything. I was asking for honest appraisal of what people thought about me. And rather than make it open-ended and say, "Hey, you know, what do you think about me?" It was more precise than that. It was, when you think about me, when you think about what my gifts might be, what I might be able to help other people with, what immediately comes to mind? Now, you know, I looked at that and I thought, well, there's nothing terribly. This was not a threatening kind of an exercise. This was not where someone was asking you, you know, what I really want to be is this. I really want to be, say, a public speaker. So I'm really working hard to do that. Hey, what do you think about that? You know, do you think I'm a good speaker? Mm-hmm. And we're going, oh my lands, you know, this guy has not got a talent for that at all. Well, I could see that would be troublesome. But this particular exercise was not geared that way at all. I thought it was very non-threatening. And six close friends got this. One replied. I mean, the others didn't even acknowledge that I had sent it. And, you know, I wasn't sure what to do with that. I left it alone. I didn't email them. I didn't call them and say, hey, you know, are you going to answer my email or not? No, I didn't do that. It turned from an exercise where I was hoping that I would get some honest feedback on what people thought. And there wasn't one thing in it. Do you think I'm good at this? Do you think I'm bad at that? That wasn't the tone of it at all. The tone was, you know, when you think of me, it was all like that. When you think of me, when you think of what I might be able to help you or anybody else with, what do you think of? Does anything come to mind? One out of six. And these are people that have known me for a long, long time. And, you know, initially I was like, well, man, I guess I overestimated my friends. But then it took me a little while and I realized, you know, we are just so unaccustomed. And I said in the email, based on the template that the fellow suggested, keep in mind, we're not comfortable doing this. This is really abnormal. We don't often do this. We don't often ask people to give us feedback. And so people are getting, you know, people are very timid to do it, which is why the questions were kind of phrased like they were. And I'm not going to lie to you. It took me a month or so to get past feeling let down, quite frankly. But, you know, I just came to conclude we are so not in the habit of doing that. And that just seemed, it just seemed almost criminal to me. It just seemed almost a shame because here we are. We've got all these people that are in our life, these people that we care about, these people that care about us. And here we are living in the internet age where we're just browbeating each other about being transparent and being open and being honest. And we can't level with people. We can't just help our friends. We can't just help our family and say, you know, when I think about you, here's something that just really leaps to my mind, something that you're just terrific at. You're really, really good at this. So let me leave you with that. Why don't today, and if you're listening to this at night, tomorrow, find somebody that you care about. One person, just one person. Single out something that you feel like they are just terrific at, really good at. And I don't mean something that you've got to really wrangle it around to convince yourself they're good at it, but something that just really leaps to mind. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be anything. You know, I know people that they're just great at meeting strangers. They just are. And I know other people, you know, they're hugging a wall. I mean, they're not good at that at all. But maybe they're really good at analyzing a situation. I mean, we've all got these strengths. Find a person who's important to you and send them some encouragement. Give them some encouragement about this one thing that leaps to your mind. And so there it is. I think what we say to ourselves is crucial. I don't think it can be overstated. I don't know that we can learn enough about that and the impact that has. I don't profess to be any kind of a neuropsychologist or neuroscientist. I'm very intrigued by all that. I have a variety of books in my library about it, and I continue to read about it. I continue to learn. I continue to try to make sure that I can improve my self-talk. Communication's a great thing, and it's really important. And I think it begins with how we communicate with ourselves. What are the words we use? What are the messages that we send ourselves? And I think that we can be very Barney Fife-ish in that we can be very deluded. We can esteem ourselves more highly than we should. We can be puffed up and think that we're far better than we really are. And conversely, I think we can also be at the other extreme. We can be so full of self-loathing that we just fail to see the things that we are good at, the things that are talents that we have, things that are in the wheelhouse of our natural aptitude. So, I think if you reach out and you help somebody else, I do think that it will come back to you. I don't know. I don't know that I believe in karma, but many people do, and you could call it that. I rather think that it's far more biblical than that. You may not agree with me, but it's you reap what you sow. You just reap what you sow. It's true in the laws of nature, and it's true in your life, and it's true in my life as well. The website is BulaNetwork.com. I hope you'll visit there. I'm going to give you one call to action today other than that one. Go over to iTunes and leave me a review. Please. What that will do is that will help other people know about us. Share the word. I'm going to be a little bit more targeted as time goes by. In fact, I'm even planning a little bit of a relaunch, a reboot here. We'll have more to say about that later. In the meantime, go out and make it a great day. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website, as we said, is BulaNetwork.com, and this is The Yellow Studio.